Hi, thank you for joining us this morning. I'm the Robin part of that combination. We have a great guest today. It's Dr. Gabriel Trujillo. He's the superintendent of Tucson Unified School District. Dr. Trujillo has been an educator for 20 years. He started his career as a teacher, teaching at both elementary and high school levels, where he taught English as a second language, ESL, and English language arts. He went on to serve as assistant principal, Human Resources Director, and Assistant Superintendent here in TUSD. During his 10 years at the Phoenix Union High School District, he was recognized as a Rodel Foundation Exemplary Principal Finalist, and he was also awarded Phoenix Union's District's Administrator of the Year Award in 2015. He became Superintendent of TUSD in 2017, and as the head of TUSD, which is the largest district in Southern Arizona, he serves about 45,000 now?
We're probably about 43 and a half.
Okay, 43 and a half thousand and their families, and oversees 89 schools and programs, as well as all the administrative stuff that goes on. So thank you for coming in. We are very interested. I mean, one of the kind of, I guess in the old days they'd call it the stepchildren, but the stepchild of schools of K-12. You are reforming and changing what happens in middle schools for the district.
Yes, and first of all, thank you for having me in.
Thanks for coming in on a Saturday.
I really appreciate the opportunity, and it's great to spend this time here with you. I am very, very passionate about this age group because for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think it is one of the most crucial points in a child's life is adolescence and the onset of those years and the throes of those years. And that's a very, very important time developmentally for the future leaders of this nation or the kids that we serve, right? Who am I in this world? What am I here for? What does it mean to be here? The whole purpose of school, all of that is being worked out with a child. The second reason why middle school, the middle grades are very important is because TUSD's very, very public struggles as we strive to be the city's number one choice for public education for K-12. The backdrop for those struggles and sort of the epicenter, if you will, have been the middle grades, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We have the highest percentage of teacher vacancies going on at these grade levels, at these middle schools. We have the lower levels of academic achievement that have been endemic at these grade levels in these middle schools. The highest percentages of exclusionary discipline, suspensions for fights and possession of drug and alcohol, highest percentages of areas where we struggle to get substitute teachers to take these jobs, highest class sizes. So it is very much a microcosm of what challenges TUSD as a whole. So in my third year of service as a superintendent, it has just become radically clear that in order to remake the landscape of Tucson Unified, we have to really, really restructure, break down the current structure, and totally rebuild the way that we do middle school education in TUSD. So it's very important. It's a priority for me, and I think we owe it to the students, first and foremost, who are at this sort of crucial stage in their lives, and then we owe it to the future vitality of TUSD.
So let's kind of break that down. So one of the things you mentioned was teacher vacancies, that middle school has the highest teacher vacancy. So how are you planning on filling those spots and then keeping those teachers there?
Well, right now we've had some success in reducing the percentage of overall teacher vacancies that we have in the district. Last year we started at 83, which was a record for the district because it'd been the first year in 5 years that the district opened school with fewer than one vacancy per school. Anytime you have fewer vacancies than schools, you're in a decent spot, still mm-hmm. not perfect. But the district traditionally, over the five previous years, had opened in the triple digits, which was just nasty, opening up with 150, 160 vacancies. So this year we've seen some success with a couple of different strategies. Earlier job fairs has been huge. We had our first job fair in February. We had another one in March. We did another one in June. I think another big strategy, and thank you to our governing board, was we were able to bring contracts significantly earlier, which
that's key.
Yes, which is right away helped us at this point in time have the fewest amount of teacher vacancies I've seen. And I think a lot of that has to do with being able to bring your teacher contracts in February, so you get a read on your veterans, who's coming back, who's retiring. The sooner that you find out who's leaving, the sooner you post, the sooner that you can make a hire. So I think that that has also been very, very helpful. And I think what's really also been helpful is being able to bring our substitutes back in-house. I think that at the end of the day, I was a little skeptical about...
What does that mean?
Well, when we were previously doing... we were previously contracting our substitute teaching responsibilities, either short-term assignments, subs only working 1 or 2 days to fill in for the teacher that's out, or long-term assignments, teachers taking a semester job or a whole year due to staff members being out for medical. Well, we were contracting that out to a third party. And that was presenting some difficulties in terms of getting teachers to take jobs, getting those subs in at schools that are classified as hard to fill. What we've seen over the year is now with the governing board's direction that TUSD directly employs those subs, substitutes now become employees of the Tucson Unified School District. We've seen more of those teachers step forward and say, you know, I think I'll just kind of come out of retirement and apply for this job and be the permanent teacher in this particular position. So that's actually been helpful for us.
Yeah.
That the subs coming out of retirement and coming kind of back into our workforce. We didn't see that as much when we were with the third party contractor. So I think those have all been winning strategies that have kind of helped us out. But that be that as it may, even though we have reduced teacher vacancies overall, the vacancies that remain are still predominantly where? Right, middle schools, middle grades instruction, 6, 7, and 8. So still not entirely having solved the issue at that grade level. We're still very much open to new strategies.
So one of your strategies is the configuration of middle schools and adding them to the elementary or adding the elementary to them.
Yeah, so we are really looking at a three-pronged reform model. We will be going to the governing board this Tuesday night for not a vote, but it's the first step of the process to get them to take action on allowing us to engage in the first step of this process, which would be what's called a DSEG impact analysis with this three-pronged model.
Mm-hmm.
And so the three-pronged model is the first prong of this reform model is the K-6 school. And probably the biggest and most important prong of the model is the K-6 school. And having sixth grade remain in their local elementary school for one more year. So elementary school A, that's a K-5 now, would simply hang on to their sixth graders for one more year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The second prong of the reform model is that sixth grade does not look like another year of fifth, okay? So step one is the local elementary school, we're going to keep our fifth graders for one more year and we're gonna be a K-6. Step two is sixth grade is different. We're looking at a transitional curricular program called AVID, which is advancement via individual determination. It's a college sort of advanced learning opportunity taking college prep framework that teaches students about time management, personal organizational skills, advocacy, how to navigate the resources and the structure of school, effective decision making academically. And it's a framework that we have in the high schools right now that has been nationally shown to make a difference in academic achievement and academic outcomes for 9 through 12. There are pockets of success around the country with schools that have applied this AVID framework to 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. And we want to take it and we want to make it our sort of high school readiness framework at sixth grade around the district.
Mm-hmm.
And so to sort of prepare students for what's known as the departmentalized model, traveling to different classrooms, having different teachers.
Right.
The third prong of our reform model, and I think the most, one of the more significant ends of it, is the restructuring of the middle school itself. So the giant standalone middle school, that is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, now becomes 7th and 8th grade only. And a couple things that will define the 7th and 8th grade. Smaller class sizes. So now we have a 7th and 8th grade, and we want to get down to 22 to 24 to 1. Which is going to allow us to do a couple of things really, really well. Mission critical algebra readiness. Mm-hmm. Mission critical reading by grade level at 9th grade. You need smaller class sizes to be able to do the types of learning activities that will increase the likelihood that we can get kids there by 9th grade. The second thing that we want to do in our vision of this sort of new 7-8 junior high model is we want to embed mandatory fine arts in all of the these new junior highs. So music education, arts education, visual arts, art. Every student has to take some sort of art, right? Whether it's painting, whether it's draw paint, whether it's music, choir. Then we want to embed social workers in every single one of these junior highs and have the social workers actually do standalone socio-emotional curricular learning activities for every student. Not wait for students to have difficulties or wait for students to get in trouble to receive assistance from the social worker, but actually the social worker facilitating daily 45-minute lessons around peer pressure resistance, self-confidence, anti-bullying, tolerance, and really embedding that component into this junior high along with mandatory music and fine arts education, along with smaller class sizes. We can totally remake the junior high experience by doing these things. And I think by this employing this model, guess what kind of a ninth grader we have a shot at producing? From Saguaro to Tucson High to Cholla, everywhere in the district. It has a potential to have remarkable outcomes.
We're going to take a break. I came into this on a class size. That was my background. Smaller classes, although for K through 3, but I'm thrilled to see reduction of class size. When we come back, I want to talk to you about two things. One is the music, and the other is the configuration, again, of the K-6. And we'll be right back. And if you have a question, call at 790-2040. Hi, we're back. You're listening to, this is Robin. I'm speaking with Superintendent Trujillo of TUSD, and we're talking about this kind of radical change in the middle school formation. And middle school has always been a difficult time, no matter what district you're in. It's a hard time for kids. And this is pretty wonderful what you're doing, is bringing the sixth grade into the, returning it to the elementary school, because that's kind of where it was in TUSD 15 years ago. And then they move sixth graders into seventh and eighth. So one of the things that I liked that you said was about how the seventh and eighth, you're going to transform that with smaller classes and having a social worker at every school. Which, how many social workers are in schools right now?
Well, right now we have a team of 27, and we just hired 5 more. So we were able to expand our social workers to 32. Right now, our social workers work predominantly with special education students. They're licensed clinical social workers. And then we have a second set that are MSWs, master social workers, and they're targeted more for our general education population. What we've seen is that the needs of the general education population are so daunting. They are extensive because you don't have to have a learning disability to suffer from trauma. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a learning disability to suffer from bipolarity or to be depressed or to suffer with addiction or to suffer with post-traumatic stress syndrome. A lot of our children who don't have any learning disability and they're just regular general education students suffer with a lot of these socio-emotional afflictions, and we don't have a lot of resources available to work with them unless they are classified as special education. So in my time, I've been able to take some steps mm-hmm. to really aim our social workers more at the general education population And I'm proud to say that for this budget cycle, we were able to pass a budget that is inclusive of 5 additional social workers that will be targeted at the general education population exclusively.
In middle school?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. What is the difference between a counselor? Because I always hear, you know, counselors in Arizona, 900 to 1. What's the difference between the role of a counselor and a social worker in the school setting?
Well, the counselor is primarily academic. So the counselor is really in charge of that student's academic course-taking life, making sure that the students are in the right classes, making sure that the students, if it's high school, have the right amount of credits, making sure that relationships between teachers and students are strong, making sure that there's a healthy connection between the parent, the teacher, and the student. I call the counselor sort of the tier one relationship manager and more about the academic, monitoring the student's academic progress, being the student's academic advocate. Then you start getting into sort of tier two challenges and tier three extreme challenges that students will face. When students start having trouble with addiction, they start using controlled substances. When students suffer grief and loss, when we see that our students are traumatized or victims of assault or sexual assault, now you need a clinician. And then that is more the realm of a licensed clinical social worker or a master social worker that will come in and work with that child. So that's sort of like the hard, division, because our counselors aren't clinical. So they have the skills to sort of manage relationships and sort of handle sort of the first level socio-emotional challenges that a student will have, first breakup, difficulty in a relationship with a teacher, might have a disagreement with another student. But then when you start having some of those more serious issues, you're going to need a clinician. And that's where the social workers come in.
One of the things I read recently was about the difference with parent involvement in elementary versus middle schools. And this is a guy named John Michael Hall. He's the founder and executive director of Strong Fathers, Strong Families, former teacher, middle school principal. And he says, if sixth graders are part of an elementary campus, the parents were involved in much the same manner as parents typically are in elementary schools. They're active in the PTO, they still volunteer, and they would will still walk their children into the building on occasion. But when sixth graders were part of a middle school, not only wouldn't parents get involved, but it seemed, this is his quote, they barely stopped the car to let their kids out in the parking lot. And so do you have any plans for bringing parents into the middle schools?
Yeah, and that was really the whole reason to include mandatory music and arts education for a couple of reasons. So first of all, when you look at the junior high model, and I want to make sure that we're clear, we want our middle schools. We want to keep our Gridleys and our Valencias and our McGees and our Pisters, and we want to keep them. But what we're trying to do is make them radically smaller learning communities. So instead of Gridley being a place where there's 1,000 students, we would love to see Gridley become 7-8 specific and maybe do 500 students and keep the same staff, but have more of a 22-1, 23-1. So the idea is at that crucial time in a child's life that you bring in music education or arts education, which the arts have been proven. There's extensive data that establishes a strong connection between activity and involvement in the arts and stronger academic outcomes for students in both English language arts and math, and in a child's involvement in the arts and the level to which a parent will engage in the school. Because now you have the concerts, now you have the rehearsals, now you have the sense of pride and connection that a parent now has with the school. With the child, you have the arts in the arts experience, which activates both sides of the brain, the creative and the logistical. Reading music is a language, so now I'm activating the mathematical side of my brain. Making music is a creative process, so now I'm activating sort of that creative part of my brain that reads patterns and looks for themes. And so bringing the arts experience to these new junior highs and making it mandatory is sort of our way of really jumpstarting and addressing the parent engagement challenge, the family and community engagement challenge we see at that grade level, and then also trying to bring in a variable that we know influences and produces stronger academic outcomes.
So you won the 2019 Arizona Music Education Award for Excellence in Music Administration. So have you already started the music program?
Yes, I am very passionate about music education and the arts, the fine arts, the performance arts, music education, dance education, choir, art, painting, ceramics, guitar, all of it, the arts, I believe really can remake an entire school district for the reasons that I've just talked about. It brings in new levels of parental engagement that if you have not instituted those programs previously, you see just a dramatic difference. TUSD is home to Opening Minds Through the Arts, which for me is just one of the most amazing programs I've seen in all my years serving as an educator. This beautiful marriage between teaching the performance arts, whether it's poetry, reading, or dancing, or choir, or playing an instrument, marrying these skills with content, right? Doing performances with a flute to, you know, you see children performing on flutes and they're singing sort of the alphabet or they're singing the national anthem. There's always sort of like some social studies element or some math element or some ELA element. And I think that it's just been such a wonderful opportunity for me to bring the music and the arts back to the extent that I've been able to with our budgetary woes after they pretty much were gutted through the recession area, not just in TUSD, but all around.
So in the old days, OMA was kind of a match program paid for half by the school, half by OMA's funding. And so will the OMA program be expanded into elementary schools and middle schools, even in the lowest income areas?
That's really been the challenge, is that finding funding for the arts, I'm not unique to any other district.
Right.
We proudly brought in 7 additional music teachers last year's budget, and were able to stop a lot of the traveling that our music teachers were doing, having to go to multiple campuses.
Yes.
And that was a big victory for us last year. Sadly, I couldn't get that done because of our budgetary woes. We just didn't have the cash this year. But through programs like the University of Arizona's lead guitar program, they've been able to come in and supplement and really go into
areas. A little shout out to Tom Patterson for doing a fantastic job.
He is doing a wonderful job. Absolutely, he's doing. And we work a lot with Brad Richter and his team. They have been able to come into areas of the district that perhaps haven't had access to OMA or haven't had as robust of a music experience because the teacher's only there one day a week or 2 days a week. So in the absence of a lot of funding challenges that we've had, lead guitar has really taken that on their shoulders and have been able to come into TUSD and shoulder some of that. But the vision is eventually to get OMA going all over the district, every single elementary school, get the OMA pipeline going, get the residence level started, the OMA residence level before you get to OMA Gold, and create sort of this pipeline of schools that are constantly in line to become our next OMA Gold school.
Okay. We are going to take a quick break right now. I'm speaking with Superintendent Trujillo, and we will be back with even more questions for him. Hi, we're back. We're speaking with Superintendent Trujillo, and he has been explaining the new program for middle school, which is a revamping of keeping the sixth grade, taking our K-5 schools back to K-6, and really investing in smaller classes and social workers and social emotional learning and STEM in the middle school. Oh, and music.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. We, as I said at the top of the hour, if there is one area in Tucson Unified that is in need of just radical reform and restructuring, it's the middle grades. And I do believe that we can totally remake the landscape by remaking the middle grade experience. And there's another aspect to this that we haven't talked about, and it's enrollment. And we do this as an educator because I believe that this is, and we will be presenting research to the board in the best interests of children at, I think, the most crucial period in their lives. When you look at this grade band, these kids coming in at 12, 13, and 14, we look at this age group where a major life event affects this age group that doesn't affect really any other grade band in our district. It doesn't hit K-3, and it doesn't hit 10, 11, and 12 as strong as it hit 6, 7, 8, and that's puberty. Who am I? What's my place in this world? Why am I here? What's the purpose of school? I'm too young to be out on my own. I'm stressed at home because my parents keep treating me like a child, but I'm too big to be a child, but I'm too young to be at home. Who are these six different people, my middle school teachers, and they all seem to have different expectations. Very confusing time.
Mm-hmm.
And then add to that, if you are coming from poverty, like 65% of Tucson Unified kids, you have all of those effects, right? If you have lack of parental involvement, if you're coming from a broken home environment, like so many of our kids, it really creates a lethal cocktail, a lethal academic cocktail for course failure and frustration with school. So when you talk about enrollment and you have all of this in the mix and you have the current structure where you have students coming into these giant environments and not being successful, you have a diminished product. So you have the DNF schools, you have the low academic achievement. Then you have our fifth grade customers, our parents, who see this and say, I don't want my child at a Tucson Unified 6th, 7th, or 8th grade middle school. The numbers don't lie, and it's public information. I mean, we lost heading into the 18-19 school year compared to the 17-18 school year. TUSD lost just over 1,300 students year over year. When we went in and we looked at the data, it was just about 650, 670 of those 1,300 families were fifth grade families choosing a different outside of TUSD product. And that told us very loudly that those families weren't happy with that option.
Well, yes. And over the years, I've heard from many parents when their kids are starting in fifth grade and they're looking to what's going to happen in six, is the size of the schools and is just too much. They worry about their little child who's been in a school with teachers they've known, and all of a sudden they're going to be in this giant school, and it has been freaking them out. But one of the things you're doing is addressing that class, that small, not only class size, but the size of the school.
If you tackle size, you can conquer behavior, you can conquer decision making, you can conquer academic outcomes. I really believe, and I'm not just talking about class size, I'm talking about community size. When you look at Dodge, Dodge is just one of our most amazing, amazing learning communities. I love that staff. I love the work that Dodge does. There's nothing like super special about Dodge that couldn't be replicated around the district. Hardworking staff members. We have hardworking teachers that do amazing things in classrooms from, you know, Collier to Banks to VC to Carrillo. But Dodge at that middle school level is has a level of success that, and so does Mansfield, they have a level of success that our middle schools are still kind of struggling to achieve. And it's a lot to do with size. Dodge is a very tight, compact, small learning community. Mm-hmm. 320, 330 kids, students. Everybody knows each other. Everybody knows each other's names. The staff across the school have very clear expectations and outcomes for success and decision-making for students. Very high levels of parent engagement, because the smaller the community is, the easier it is to navigate for a parent,
yes.
Right? The more comfortable a student is, and the smaller the community is inside the school, the more that they're able to do inside of a school day, because they're not managing all of the challenges that come with a large environment with regard to student behaviors and the tardies and the truancy and the litter. So all of that becomes really extra time and extra opportunities to do things in a smaller environment, be more successful.
One of the things that, this is not just focused on middle school, but one of the things that we hear from teachers is lack of autonomy. And or is with this program, is that being addressed at all?
Well, one of the things that we know is that when you talk about teacher satisfaction, and we have survey after survey and research study after research study that equally as powerful as salary are working conditions, that teachers will hang in there with salary that is not ideal. Teacher salary concerns have been well voiced long before the Red for Ed movement. Mm-hmm. Teacher salaries were a primary concern. But teachers have long stated, and even in Red for Ed, in that movement, teachers have long stated, it's not just about my salary. Give me a building that is not falling down. Give me an air conditioned unit that keeps it livable, right? Give me a computer that works. Give me internet that works. Give me give my school custodial support so my classroom gets cleaned. Please give me a social worker in my school. Please pay the bus drivers. So it's a lot to do with working conditions. And when you look at autonomy and what we're seeking to do in this sort of new 7-8 environment especially, is to give the teachers the gift of two things: lower class sizes and time. When the students are in music class or art class, or they are in lessons with the social workers, that becomes teacher collaboration time. That becomes precious time that teachers will have to work in teams. That is really crucial. Teachers, right behind money is time. Give me time to work with my colleagues. Give me time to create. Give me time to innovate. And that's really what the model is seeking to do.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, I just heard about this yesterday, and that is that TUSD is in partnership with the College of Ed Counseling Program for free counseling services.
Yes, we've had that going on in our family resource centers for probably since the spring, since May.
And it's available to any TUSD student and their family.
Absolutely.
So how would people find out how they can get to that? Do they go through their school or?
You can go to any of our family resource centers and get information if you need the counseling services. We have the Palo Verde Family Resource Center located inside of Palo Verde High School. We have the Catalina Family Resource Center, which is over on the Catalina campus. For our residents and communities in the Southwest area of the district, we have the Southwest Center, which also features a family resource center. We have the Duffy Family Resource Center that services more of sort of the central city and the U of A corridor.
So you have it geographically spread out.
Geographically spread out. And then, of course, who can forget Wakefield for our West Side residents, mm-hmm. Home of Higher Ground and a lot of great nonprofits that do work with the district. So it's a wonderful resource. And U of A, I can't say enough great things about the University of Arizona. And we talked about lead guitar. This is just another example of the University of Arizona getting involved in Tucson Unified for better outcomes for future students.
So one of the things I wanted that happened this year, I mean, you're a former ESL teacher, and one of the things that happened at the legislature is they got rid of the four-hour block.
Yes.
And they also said that districts could use research-based, proven research-based programs rather than the four-hour block. There's still a two-hour block, I believe.
So what's great, and this is very exciting for us because this is our planning year.
Mm-hmm.
So our team, our Language Acquisition Division team, right now is in the process of convening a committee of ESL teachers from around the district, looking at research, and we're going to spend the year writing our model. And then we have to propose our model to the Board of Education and then, of course, our governing board. So it's a big year for us to sort of remake the landscape for ELD instruction. So a couple things to understand about what the legislature has supported. So the four-hour block technically is not eliminated. It's just not mandatory.
Oh, okay.
Which opens the door for mm-hmm. all kinds of opportunities. And the four-hour block doesn't, if you do utilize it, it doesn't have to be the primary mode for which you deliver language acquisition services in English for non-English speaking students. So those are like the two big changes. Our vision is to develop a framework in which schools have choice between three or four different kinds of models, depending on the amount of students that they serve and the level of language proficiency of the students.
So this year, you are getting feedback from the ELL. Do you call it ELL or ESL?
Well, the practitioner is the ESL teacher.
Okay.
So the certified English as a second language teacher. The student is the English language learner. Right.
Okay.
And I prefer the emerging the emerging bilingual citizen, but we'll say the English language learner. And then the model for which the services are delivered is the ELD, English Language Development Model. So a little confusing.
Okay. Yeah. So you're bringing the teachers, the ESL teachers,
correct,
practitioners, together this year for the planning year.
Absolutely.
Implement it, and they will come up with several different plans that then schools then get to choose what fits their population the best.
Absolutely. That's exactly what we're doing. And this is the planning year, and we're hoping to bring forth the Tucson Unified Framework for English Language Acquisition Services, which is really what we're going to call it. And then inside the framework, a school could choose one of three or four models that I've asked our team to kind of develop, because your needs are different. Like if you're Catalina High School, where a quarter of your population mm-hmm. is either students with disabilities or refugee students, single, second language learners, you may need a block model. You might need 2-hour blocks, right?
Right.
If you're Fruchtendler Elementary or maybe Marshall, where you don't have a lot of English language learners, maybe you might need a resource model, where the ESL practitioner works in small groups with students. So we want to develop models of choice
right.
according to the needs of the community, because TUSD, of course, is so diverse.
Now, one of the things that is kind of up in the air is that the dual language programs for Spanish speakers did not open up. And so do you see, there were legislators that were pushing for this. Do you see that as an option for kids? Is it something we need to work on? Do we need to, you know, make sure dual language is available for English language learners?
You know, that's always been one of my passion areas. Well, I'm as a member of the ESL community, my lifelong passion has always been the teaching of English to speakers of other languages. That's how I started as a teacher. I carry that passion with me now. And part of that is a passion for dual language,
mm-hmm.
because the research as a practitioner in my experience has also been that the stronger that a student is in his or her native language, the quicker and the more effective the transition to English, the faster and the more impactful the road to fluency is in English, and which is why it's crucial that our English language learners, especially those whose primary language is Spanish or native language is Spanish, get access to those two-way dual language programs at the point of entry, especially.
So if your team comes up with that as an option, is that a viable option in these times, or does more have to happen at the state level?
Well, I think we're going to have to work with OLS, the Office of Language Acquisition mm-hmm. Services up at ADE, and kind of test the waters to see what the feeling would be if a model that was inclusive of English as a second language, you know, or ELL students participating in a dual language program, if that would be viable or something that they would support. So I think it's all about kind of testing the waters to mm-hmm. see where we would land with that.
And we are going to take a break. We'll be right back. We're speaking with Dr. Trujillo, and we'll be right back. Thanks. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk with Robin and Al. I am Robin today. It's Robin in today, and I am speaking with the superintendent of TUSD, Dr. Trujillo. And we don't, this is kind of the end of the show, so I wanted to go back to the transformation of middle schools.
Absolutely.
And what your plan is.
So time-wise, Tuesday night, governing board meeting,
mm-hmm.
we take the first step in the process. We ask our board for action to allow us to move forward with the research, right, which would be facilities analyses, impact analyses, to see, because we're under a court order, to see if any of these changes would impact our ability to continue to desegregate the schools or to be released from court supervision. That's called a DSEG impact analysis. So those of you that tune into the meeting, you're going to hear us refer to what's called a DIA. Okay. And that's the first step in the process. So it's not the board voting to approve any of this yet. It's the board saying, it's us going before the board and saying, would you give us action to start the process, which is basically the research process. So we want to get that approval on Tuesday night. Then what that will allow us to do is to put together the facilities analysis, the cost analysis, the desegregation analysis, the transportation analysis, and then come back to the board with results in roughly 90 days, okay? And that also triggers the process for us to work with the plaintiffs in the desegregation case. It's a collaborative process. We have to work with plaintiffs on both sides of the case, the African-American representatives, the Fisher plaintiff representatives, and the Mendoza plaintiff representatives. And there's a process called read and respond, where they get to note concerns, file objections. We then would go back to the board, probably, let's see, July, August, September, late September, early October, with a study session, which would be a progress report of where we are at in terms of working with our plaintiff groups and working with the special master in the case, with the goal of coming back for recommended action, probably in December or January, so that we could implement for the year 2021. At that point, we would be submitting to the court for final court approval.
To see if they agree to see if the court would. K-6 model.
Absolutely.
And then the smaller middle schools.
Absolutely.
So that is moving forward, hopefully, on Tuesday at the board meeting. And what about the music program you talked about? Is that moving forward? Does that need board approval? Is it already happening?
Well, music education is already happening. So the nice thing and why this model is cost effective is that at the big middle schools, we already have music programs.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't touch every kid, right? Because it's not mandatory that every kid,
right?
In a lot of the middle, some of the middle schools, the kids are able, a lot of them are able to take the classes. So we already kind of have them embedded. So what the advantage will be once these large middle schools get smaller, now you're small enough where every single student can take either band, orchestra, choir, or the program that's in place. And in some places that don't have it, we want to make sure that we leave it open to the school community to see, well, what kind of program do you want?
Well, that is something parents will be thrilled about. So is there any other thing? Oh, I have a question. The state used to have the districts do a cost analysis of special education. And I've heard from several superintendents that the cost of special ed has gone up dramatically. And the state quit taking this information. It used to be required, and then they stopped requiring it in, I think, 2007, 2008. And so some superintendents have said it has gone up so dramatically that they are taking general ed money and putting it into...
Absolutely. The state doesn't want to be held accountable. There used to be what's called a census. And I remember in my principal years, we were all required to complete the census for the district on a school-by-school level. Well, of course, you don't want that census to continue because it's going to show the astronomical increases in cost and volume. Tucson Unified is home to 7,100 students with disabilities. We are the largest special ed population in Southern Arizona, one of the largest in Arizona. Flowing Wells and TUSD, our neighbors, we share being over 15% of our entire student body being students with disabilities. And when you look at the students with disabilities that we have the most vulnerable, labor-intensive, and expensive-to-service segments of the special ed community. We have wheelchair-bound, we have autistic, we have severely cognitively impaired, medically fragile students that are the most expensive to service. They require room modifications, ramps, wheelchairs, one-on-one adult assistance, diapering services. It's no coincidence that we have seen this population inside of Tucson Unified skyrocket, because we know that the majority, not all, but the majority of the independently operated charter schools and private schools inside of the TUSD attendance zone, and quite frankly, inside of the Sunnyside attendance zone and inside of the Flowing Well zone, they're not taking these students. These students show up to their doors and they say, well, we have very limited services for special education students.
We won't be really able to
take
care of your child.
But,
you know,
go check out TUSD. They've got psychologists. They have a great autism program. They'll do door-to-door transportation. Well, we love all and we serve all. But state of Arizona, legislature, you got to show us the funding to be able to do right by these students. And so because we're taking more, we are stretching our special education infrastructure like a rubber band. It's exactly like you said, to the extent that now we have to take general education money and pipe it into special education services. We do it because it's the right thing to do, because we are educators and we love all and we serve all, but it is not helping the cause. And I think it feeds the special education teacher vacancy that we grapple with, because the special education teacher has seen higher caseloads. They have seen more demands on their time. They've seen more complex and labor-intensive IEPs that they have to manage. And that stresses the infrastructure. And of course, they're going to go shopping. They're going to go look for a district that has a better infrastructure to support them. Our psychologists have seen dramatic increases to their caseloads, the amount of students that they're asked to assess, the amount of students that they're asked to manage. And that does not make us competitive with districts that can offer psychologists better pay, smaller workloads, better working conditions. So special education is the next frontier for me. It's right up there with middle schools.
So it seems there's a twofold funding problem there. One is, if you're 46th, 47th, 48th in per pupil spending, you know, and you're stretching that budget, that's a state problem. But the other thing is the federal problem. When IDEA passed, the feds committed to paying for 40% of the services. They have never paid more than 17%, and this year it's 16%. If they would pay their share, the share they promised the states, we would be in a state like Arizona, which doesn't fund education adequately, we would be in much better shape than we are now.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head.
So let's see. I think we've covered everything. Wraparound schools. Oh, what about, I've heard some schools are taking food that isn't eaten in the school lunch program, rewrapping it and providing it to children to take home for weekends, kids who don't have food at home.
Yeah, we have a number of initiatives that are designed to make sure that students have food. Most recently, we've opened up a couple of different food pantries, most recently at Catalina, that are fairly large, that parents can come in and have access to non-perishable items, canned foods, other types of non-perishable foods, staples, if you will, rice, beans, that I think has seen a lot of business and is really doing a lot of good in the community.
Okay, great. So thank you for coming in and talking about the middle school reform project that you're doing. I am with you on this is a delicate and needs attention age.
Absolutely. It's a needs attention issue also for Tucson Unified.
Right. About how many middle school students do you have? Do you know?
Let's see. We have, we're pretty close to 8,000 or 9,000. It's a pretty large group of students that we serve. Because I'm also adding in the students that, I'm looking at 6-8 as a whole. So I'm looking at the amount of 6-8 students that we have in K-8 environments, and the amount of middle school students that we have at our standalones, whether it's Dodge, Mansfield, it's about 8,000.
So in the reform, you just mentioned K-8 schools. Will the K-8 schools under the plan, stay as K-8?
They'll stay as K-8. Yeah, they're going to remain.
And then you're reducing the size of the middle schools, the standalone middle schools, by putting sixth grade back with the elementary?
Correct.
And I think parents will be thrilled.
Well, that's the goal, is to get in there and create an environment that becomes the parents' choice, and then, of course, to build the college and career ready ninth grader going into any TUSD high school.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in. And is there a contact information, or someone is asking about a website to find out more information?
You can just go to TUSD1.org.
Okay.
Go to our main page, and once we get the process started with our governing board and they sort of green light or give us approval, we hope we get it, we will build a site that will be dedicated to the middle school reform project. We just don't want to get ahead of our board at this point because we want to wait for...
Right, and people can listen in to the board meetings. They can attend Correct. The board meetings, but they can also listen in at this same site, TUSD1.org?
Yes, and okay. You can go to the governing board link. And we just have a fabulous new reformatting of our website. It's way more user-friendly. I'm very happy with the new format. I had a lot of concerns about the previous one, but we went live with a brand new website format. I think that the community will enjoy it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming in, and thank you for all the great work you're doing.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
We will be back next week. Al will be here, and thank you for joining us.